So the next point, chapter 7. Is not accepting unfit disciples, constructing many temples, or reading many books. Another stricture is that a person may have many disciples, but he should not act in such a way that he will be obliged to any of them for some particular action or some favor. And one should also not be very enthusiastic about constructing new temples. Nor should one be enthusiastic about reading various types of books, save and except the ones which lead to the advancement of devotional service. Practically, if one very carefully reads Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and this nectar of devotion, that will give him sufficient knowledge to understand the science of Krishna consciousness. One need not take the trouble of reading other books. In the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 13th chapter, verse 8, Narad Muni, while discussing with Maharaj Yudhishthir the various functions of the different orders in society, especially mentions rules for the sannyasis, those persons who have renounced this material world. One who has accepted the sannyasa order of life is forbidden to accept as a disciple anyone who is not fit. Sannyasis should first of all examine whether a prospective student is sincerely seeking Krishna consciousness. If he is not, he should not be accepted. However, Lord Chaitanya's causeless mercy is such that he advised all bona fide spiritual masters to speak about Krishna consciousness everywhere. Therefore, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, even the sannyasis can speak about Krishna consciousness everywhere. And if someone is seriously inclined to become a disciple, the sannyasi always accepts him. The one point is that without increasing the number of disciples, there is no propagation of the cult of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sometimes, even at a risk, a sannyasi in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. Later on, by the mercy of such a bona fide spiritual master, the disciple is gradually elevated. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for some prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. Similarly, a bona fide spiritual master has no business reading many books simply to show his proficiency or to get popularity by lecturing in different places. One should avoid all these things. It is also stated that a sannyasi should not be enthusiastic about constructing temples. We can see in the lives of various acharyas in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they were not very enthusiastic about constructing temples. However, if somebody comes forward to offer some service, the same reluctant acharyas will encourage the building of costly temples by such servitors. For example, Rupa Goswami was offered a favor by Maharaj Man Singh, the commander-in-chief of Emperor Akbar, and Rupa Goswami instructed him to construct a large temple for Govindaji, which cost vast amounts of money. So a bona fide spiritual master should not personally take any responsibility for constructing temples. But if someone has money and wants to spend it in the service of Krishna, an acharya like Rupa Goswami may utilize the devotee's money to construct a nice costly temple for the service of the Lord. Unfortunately, it happens that someone who is not fit to become a spiritual master may approach wealthy persons to contribute for temple constructions. If such money is utilized by unqualified spiritual masters for living comfortably in costly temples without actually doing any preaching work, this is not acceptable. In other words, a spiritual master needn't be very enthusiastic for constructing temple buildings, simply in the name of so-called spiritual advancement. Rather, his first and foremost activity should be to preach. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj recommended that a spiritual master print books. If one has money, instead of constructing costly temples, one should spend his money for the publication of authorized books in different languages for propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. So basically, we see in all these that we're dealing here with collecting too much, atyahara. That in trying to, for some reason or another, for one's own gain, one is collecting more than he needs. So here is either in the way of disciples, too many disciples, for prestige, or building so many nice temples, or very nice temple for prestige, or having so much knowledge in so many different books, the idea that people will be impressed by what one says. So that all these things should be given up. They have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. So then the holy, it's also one of the 10 offenses to the holy name of preaching to the faithless. So someone who is not properly situated, who does not have proper interest in Krishna consciousness, then should not be given initiation. If they are, then this is also that offense to the holy name. So when it's, so whole idea is there's preaching, in other words, has more to it than just getting someone to surrender to Krishna in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, but it means taking them from there on. So it basically takes instruction and guidance up to the platform of you know, at least bhava. Like that. After that, still instruction and guidance is there, but then it's on a different level. You know, it takes on a different flavor. So that is the range of preaching. So that kind of discussion and association must be going on. But it's like the attention will be on bringing so many people to Krishna consciousness. But it's understood that once they come, then they have to be further trained in Krishna consciousness. Not that the preaching stops just once they move into the temple. Because if they're not trained, then they will not advance further, and then they'll get into so much, you know, kind of activities that are not advisable, you know, especially kutinati, which is, you know, I say, politics, duplicity, then criticizing devotees, fault-finding, all these kind of things. This one comes up very, very strongly. Or the senses again become very active because one forgets about the difficulties of the material world. And as one is purified, then one becomes more pious, but then one is attracted by pious sense gratification. That is also there. It means the Bhagavatam is talking about, you know, people who are very attached to their place and the family members and the, you know, ancestral home and all those kinds of things. But many of these things are not that attractive to Westerners to some degree. Maybe, maybe not. Because of the passion in that, the senses are much more important. The senses, the prestige. But then as one becomes purified, then one finds that these aspects become the attractive, more attractive feature. So because they're more subtle, they're more sattvic, they're not so passionate, then sometimes we may mistake them for Krishna conscious, and we're not so serious about being careful of them. Then we find ourselves again entangled. Now, of course, now we are entangled with a golden chain instead of an iron chain. But still, it's an entanglement. So one always has to be very careful that as one is becoming purified, one does not become attached to pure sense gratification like that. Because also of the different groups of persons in the mode of goodness, you also have those who are very attached to sense gratification. Those who are interested in karma kanda, they are situated in goodness. And they're following all the rules and regulations, they're doing all the yajnas. Like that, their lifestyle is basically in goodness. So their desires, they have desire to enjoy, but it's on a sattvic platform. You know, like, what's your name? Urvasi. So when Maharaj Puru Ravas wanted to marry her, then she said, all right, under a few conditions. One is you only cook with ghee. I will not eat anything that's not cooked in ghee. Means you couldn't cook in oil or just have, you know, she was not about to eat, you know, steamed broccoli and alfalfa sprouts. You know, it just was not on the menu. It had to be cooked in ghee. You know? So, and remember that one? Oh yeah, the king would never appear before naked. And then, the last one, was he never questioned her? Like that, similar like Ganga. Yeah, would never question. So, we see that the refinement is much more. It's in the mode of goodness. But the aspects is, it's not that there's not attachment to sense gratification. That's the thing. So one has to be careful, is that Krishna recommends the mode of goodness for the platform in which to perform one's activities, but he also warns against becoming attached to the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness, then one become attached to the pleasures that are there, the peaceful life and all this, and then one has a tendency to not keep the driving mood of Sankirtan, like that, the preaching. It still must always be forefront. So, means if we've joined because of the anxieties of the material world, then when those anxieties go away, we're very satisfied. You know? So we have to be careful that we don't get stuck on that platform. Is that they're going away, and so they're very happy. Because the thing is there's no such thing as a neutral position, not in the conditioned state. And even on the liberated platform, the neutral position is also temporary. Those on the platform of bhava, then those on the Brahma-Bhuta platform that merge into the Brahman, they can only stay there for a limited amount of time. And then after some time, they again must come down to perform activity. So one can only be satisfied with, happy, that the anxieties of the material world have gone away for a short period of time. Right? Unless one is always preaching, then in one's own life, then there may be no problems. But you can constantly see the problems outside. This would be also a reason that the brahmacharis would go out begging every day. Because then they actually get to see material life. But they're protected because they're going out begging and this and that, and everybody knows the rules, so that when they go, and then they give them something. But they can actually see. They'll see things. They'll see how people act, what's going on, what's happening. Plus, it keeps them in a humble mood, because somebody may give, somebody may not give, some of the local people may, or children may make comments and laugh and joke. And I mean, we see that when the Avantipur Brahmana, after he left the home, he took sannyas, and you know, the young people would come along and snatch his danda away and make all kinds of comments, and sometimes even pass urine in his food, and I mean, all kinds of really nasty things, you know. So this class of people are always present on the planet. It's not just now. It's just before there were a few, and now there's a lot. They're the predominant. But that class is always there, even in the Vedic age. So unless we're seeing these things, or hearing about, or rendering service, you know, very engaged in service, where we are going to, in proper understanding, in proper devotion, where there's going to be realization, then at one point we're going to not be satisfied with just being peaceful, that there's no material anxieties. Then we're going to want to endeavor for some material satisfaction. So that will come from that platform of goodness. So one has to be careful of that. You know, like that. So instead of wanting, you know, the pleasures of the animals or the pleasures of the lower planets, or even, you know, then one is interested in the pleasures of the heavenly planets. You know, very nice relationships, very good exchanges and all this kind of thing. And that is one's goal, that is one's interest, like that. So one has to be careful of that. Or artha, then from performing devotional service, then so much opulence comes. Then one is satisfied, and then one doesn't. But then at some point, even that amount is not going to be enough. One's going to want more, because you become reconditioned, right? You're conditioned to the mode of ignorance or mode of passion. Then you come in contact with goodness, then there's a relief. Because mode of goodness is illuminating. But then if we're not going further for devotional service, then we're going to get implicated in karma again. So we're either going to be going for heavenly pleasures, or we're going to be going for knowledge. So therefore, all these different things. The pleasures of living in the temples, having so much following, or having so much knowledge like that, you know, just to impress people or just for one's own satisfaction. Then these aspects, these are against the devotional principles. So the karma and jnana will come up, though it will be on a more subtle platform. like that. So Maya has tricks right up to liberation, even at the platform of liberation. Then she has the trick where we think that we're God, like that. When we understand fully that we're Brahman, but then we think that we're God. So Maya has all these tricks, like that. Means once you get to prema, then no more tricks. But below prema, then she's many tricks. So many tricks she has. So we have to be very careful now. So here is that on restriction of not accepting, because the most important element is the siksha. Like that. The siksha is the most, because otherwise why would it mention that in the line of Lord Chaitanya is, even though he's not accepting this disciple, but they can still preach. Why would this be mentioned other than because the siksha is the most important element? This is the element of diksha that's most prominent. So even though they won't accept and give initiation to someone who is not properly qualified, they will still preach. They can still publicly preach and like this, like that. Of course, if there's individuals who come and just waste one's time, then that's another thing. Like Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj he was sitting one day in his bhajan kutir, and you know, in the chair, in the door, because you get light, you know, you get air, and it's, you know, pleasant there, and he's chanting his rounds. And then he sees this wealthy, you know, materialist coming towards his bhajan kutir. So he kind of leans forward and takes the door, and just as the guy's getting close, and then pushes the door shut. And then he tells his servant, tell them if they went darshan, they have to pay 2 rupees. You know, because he can see these people are not sincere. They're just coming to see the sadhu, get blessings for some, you know, business deal or family or wedding or something like this, you know. So they went and told him, and then the guy agreed, gave 2 rupees. So then he opened the door and says, okay, look how much you want. You know, like that. And the guy doesn't know what to say. Because, you know, that was all, you know, he wasn't interested to talk to the guy because he had nothing, you know, there was nothing to talk about. So in that situation, then one might find that one avoids, you know, talking and stuff too in those kind of situations. But otherwise, then in the general body of devotees, then the speaking goes on. So even though there's a restriction on the, so that means that in the diksha, it means the restriction is on the ritual side of it, and on the committed side. You don't commit oneself in giving instructions unless the person is very sincere, like that. So that aspect is there. Yeah, whether a prospective student is sincerely seeking Krishna consciousness. If he is not, he should not be accepted. Yeah, and then, if someone's serious, then they accept them. Like that. Yeah. The Prabhupada mentions here that one may even take a risk, like that. Because then by, you know, constant association and by the chanting of the holy name, one is able to come up. One is able to take up more seriously Krishna consciousness. Then the bona fide spiritual master, in the dealings with disciples or with whoever, never allows himself to be obliged to any of them. So that means is the service that is accepted is for their benefit. It's a very important thing. Prabhupada made this point to one sannyasi. He told him that he said servants, he should change them every few months. He mentioned and recommended every 3 months. He says, because otherwise after 3 months they become, familiar. They become lazy, they don't do the service nicely. So only reason that the opportunity is being given for service is for their benefit. It's not that the spiritual master requires it. It's for their benefit. Because Krishna is going to take care anyway. You know, however he likes. It may be nice, it may be not nice, but that's what the devotee accepts. So that opportunity to render so much service is actually for the benefit of the disciples. If that's understood, then the disciples are much more careful to render the service nicely. Because as soon as they don't do it nicely, then that opportunity is removed. like that. It will not be available. And then it will be understood that the service being rendered is not for the benefit of the spiritual master, but is for the benefit of the disciple. So that aspect should be understood by everybody. Because the spiritual master should be very careful to not become obliged to anyone. Otherwise you have to come back to render service to them. Because they've done service. So one has to be very, very careful. He's specifically talking about a sannyasi. Sannyasi must be independent. No, here he hasn't mentioned sannyasi yet. Should not act in such a way that he will be obliged to any of them for some particular action or some favor. So, in other words, no one can buy the spiritual master by, you know, money, activities, or, you know, different things. It's a matter of it's for their benefit. So then the spiritual master is very pleased by the service rendered and then gives his blessings. That is there. Because when spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna becomes pleased. What's that sound? No, they're cutting, I understand. What's the other sound? Oh, I see. Then reading many books, if it's just proficiency to get popularity, if they're in connection with Krishna consciousness, then that is, it says, save and accept the ones which lead to the advancement of devotional service. So if they lead to that, then that's good. If they don't lead to that, then there's no need to read too many books. Then of these, the essential Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion. These are four main books. It means all aspects of knowledge, whatever there is contained in these four books. The conclusions of everything, and the details of whatever is important. This is here. The Bhagavad Gita establishes very nicely the sambandha and tells what is our relationship with the Supreme Lord. You know, it gives the philosophical and tells us what is the actual understanding of devotional service, the actual philosophy, what is going on here. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then establishes, it's actually the complete, it carries whatever all the other books have, but it gives very, very nice example, and in so many ways explains very nicely, it just continues where the Bhagavad Gita leaves off. And then the Nectar of Devotion then explains the technical details of devotional process that Krishna is speaking of in the Gita and that we see practiced by the devotees in the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita then its emphasis is on the preaching and on the understanding the development of love of God. So like this, the complete spectrum of sambandha, abhideya, prayojana is covered by these books. And because they're done because the Bhagavatam and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya Charitamrita then are done through stories, therefore so much practical example is being given there. So very, very nicely it is explained there. Even the Nectar of Devotion, then when it gets into the practical application, always example is given there from different pastimes or different situations. So it becomes very, very complete. And all the other branches of knowledge find their conclusions in these books. Whatever is there in any of the other branches of knowledge, the conclusion of it is in the Srimad Bhagavatam and these other areas. We seek Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, they deal with all the different subjects. They're all mentioned. Everything's mentioned. But just the conclusion. They don't get into the details. But the conclusion is there. So if you know these books, then you do know everything. Like that. One just has to have that faith and to study to see what are the connections. Then one knows. Okay. Yeah. And then personally for constructing the temples means they must get the temple is there for the deity worship, the Pancharatra. It attracts people. When they see a big temple, people will go and see. There's something to see, something to do, people will come. There's not many will come. Prabhupada told that too. You know, one journalist was here. They asked Prabhupada why there were sannyasis, why so much fancy buildings and this and that. And he said, if Bhaktivedanta Swami sat down under a tree next to the Ganga, he says, you would not be here. He says, you've come here because we have all these big buildings. So that's why we built them. Like that. So only for that purpose. But it's only as people come forward, then they do. Prabhupada also engaged very much the Westerners in doing things because they were very active and needed to have very passionate activities. So they were very good at these things. You know, men and manpower seems to be always the thrust. You know, who's in control or who's got the money. So get money to build nice temples and then control everything so it can get done like this. So you engage them very nicely. But otherwise, on our own, we're not interested for ourselves. It means how you can tell is you've built the place. When it's finished, then it is able to be engaged in the preaching and the deity worship. Then you don't feel you have a claim over the building. You don't say, well, I collected $500,000 for this or more. Or one does not start court cases so that one can maintain control of, you know, lands and temples like this. Because you feel, because you built it, therefore you have the right. These kind of things are not done. In the previous time, someone, you know, wanted to, you know, not be overly Krishna conscious. They just walked out the door. Right? They didn't take anything with them. You know? And they went out and did whatever they wanted to do. And then when they got tired of that, then they came back to the temple and then took up the service. But nowadays, they want to, you know, be un-Krishna conscious and maintain their position and maintain their facility and maintain their control and like this. So it's a little different than it used to be. That was the old school. Right? Now the new school is more liberal. But, so here's books. Here's a temple. Someone may come, someone may not come. But books are there, and they can always be read. Temple, if nothing's happening, someone will come. They may or may not get benefit from the preaching. So, of course, they take prasad or they hear kirtan, but if there's no kirtan going on, no one's there distributing prasad, no one's giving out the Charinamrita, you know, then very minimal benefit may be gotten. But a book, anyone opens the book anywhere and reads anything, they're benefited. Therefore, books are the most highly recommended. Any questions on this section?
Yes. You mentioned a little earlier, the spiritual master not to be obliged to like come back to serve. Now, isn't the spiritual master serving his disciples? Is that a service?
Yeah, it's a service. This way? Or maybe you could come in that door?
Yeah, is the temple here?
Yeah, the temple is there, but this is class.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I'm having the electricity here.
Oh, I see. If you want to sit here, then please, welcome. If you want to go in the house, then it's easier from the back.
Okay. Ladies, can you sit there? Hare
Krishna. Means service is there. They are rendering service. Okay. But the point is that one is not accepting service just for one's own benefit. Then one is obliged, like that. One is accepting service because that there has to be some way of establishing relationship, and there has to be some exchange. And you're trying to train people in behaving in a, you know, way, a devotional way of exchange in proper relationships. Because up to now, they've been engaged in material activities and material relationships. And because of this, they don't actually know how to deal properly. So then they have to be trained how to do properly. First, if you're dealing with from the West, just how to deal as human. And then from there, then how to deal in the devotional line, you know. In India, then much of the time, then you just have to train them in the devotional line. Unless the training's not very good, then you also have to train them also to become, you know, follow the proper etiquettes and culture. But that's the thing, is that without that relationship, you can't establish that very nicely. So in service, then that's where you see. Because otherwise, you're sitting, you're talking to somebody, you can see a lot, whether they understand or not, what is their sincerity or not. But many times, you know, someone is very good at listening or has a great interest or is very, you know, sincerely would like to know or do those different things that are being talked about. But it's when it's being applied, that's when you really see what's happening. Then you actually understand what's going on. So there must be some way to see the service and to find out how they're adjusting in the service, working with others and like that. Then you can see if they're advancing nicely or not. So it's for the purpose of rendering the service of helping them advance, but it's not for oneself like that. It's not so important.
Yeah. Like sometimes a little difficult because we find that the Kanista disciple in particular is very keen to do personal service to the guru and has actually an improper mentality before and then dealing with him.
Yeah, yeah.
So it must be quite a stress.
Yeah, it can be, because there's many times a lot more is expected than what is there. It means one has one's own interests, own desires that need to be fulfilled on the, you know, on the either the sensual or the material emotional platform. And so then sometimes one is expecting to get that from the spiritual master. But that's not actually the duty. To some degree that may be there as a help, but that can't be the prominent feature. It may be a little bit in the beginning, but then after a while that goes away. Just like the child in the beginning, so much care and everything is there, and there's not much understanding, but as they grow, then they start understanding, they actually start taking part in the running of the house. And then when they're older, they actually then take up the duties of the house. Like that. So there must be that progress is seen. If it's just that one finds a comfortable situation, means the disciple in the relationship, and wants to keep it at that, then there's a difficulty, because then that becomes a burden. Like that, yes.
So pleasing the spiritual master is most like follow his instructions, really?
Yeah.
That's most pleasing.
Yeah. The following instructions is the actual essence. Though it's very natural, as Mataji said, to be able to reciprocate with service and this and that, but it's also very much understood that if the instructions are being followed, the mood is being understood, and one is serving that desire, then it's just like we may not be rendering any personal service to Lord Chaitanya, like doing the deity worship or that, but if you understand he wants the preaching to go on, and we do that following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, he is pleased. Like that. So like that, one understands the instructions that are there and then tries to do that. Like Prabhupada says, one should chant Hare Krishna, one should associate with the devotees, you know, one should live in the Dham, one should serve the deities, one should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we're doing that very nicely, then naturally Prabhupada will be pleased.
This is also with the instructing spiritual master.
Yeah, with the instructing spiritual master. Spiritual master means instructing. Then of the instructing, one gives diksha. So they're all instructing. Like that. They're all instructing spiritual masters. But the one who gives diksha has a special, how you say, responsibility. The founder acharya and the Diksha Guru. They're both Sikshas. And then all the preachers, the sannyasis, like here, sannyasis traveling, preaching. So they preach anywhere. So they're not speaking necessarily to disciples. They're just speaking. So this is also, there's Siksha Guru, but there's no commitment on necessarily, there's commitment to the mission, but there's not individual personal commitment between that speaker and some and the audience. Only if they're sincere, then it may be more, there may be more commitment. Otherwise not. You know, one is committed to serve the spiritual master by giving proper instruction, by giving, you know, speaking about Krishna like that. Then that is proper. But personally taking up someone's, you know, the responsibility to help someone specifically, then that is only seen if it's very sincere. Though both are siksha. Does that make some make understand? Yeah.
As you were saying about the spiritual master seeing if the instructions are given or applied, and then he can really tell.
Mm.
In a lot of situations within our movement, the spiritual master isn't there to see, because the way that our movement
is. Others are there. Temple president is there, other people are there. Hare Krishna. Yes. Other people are there. Hare Krishna. You know? Other people are there. Please. Other people are there, so they can always ask them. You know, you can see so many ways. Everybody has a complaint, and you know something's not going right. Everybody says it's very nice, and you know things are going in another way. If it's mixed, then you have to see who's saying what. Right? You know, if those who are very sincere and solid in their devotional service you know, not saying nice things, and those who are a little flaky are saying nice things, then that is also a problem. Like that. Someone has to see. Because we have to remember, the Lord is in control. The Lord is the one. The Guru is the super soul. You know, he is the spiritual master. Since we're not hearing from him, therefore we hear from others around. Right? So then the Lord will get all these things done through all these persons. So it will happen. It will happen. One cannot fool Krishna. You know? Like that. Because Krishna will make an arrangement. So therefore one cannot fool the spiritual master. You know? At some point it will be understood what's happening. Right? Anything else?
Sure. Both the Diksha and the Siksha Gurus, they have to be treated on the same level.
Yes, but
more respect has to be given to the Diksha Guru.
See, in this, see, is Siksha and Diksha. I mean, there's different levels. It's just like, you know, one's father, one's uncles, and the senior members of the community. They all are respected. Of that, the father, there has to be some special respect is there. And then the uncles, that'll be a little bit more than, let's say, other senior members of the community. So it depends upon the closeness, depends upon the commitment, like that. So the Diksha Guru is specifically committed. The founder Acharya is the one who is, everything is based on. So that relationship is the most prominent. It means everything has to be judged in relationship with that. It means if the spiritual master is speaking what the founder says, then they're accepted as bona fide. If they're not, they're not. Their only standing is based on what he says. Understand? If you start speaking different from the founder, then their position, they're no longer in the position of bona fide. When they start speaking, then they are. So that is there. Then, of those who are serving on behalf of the spiritual, of the founder Acharya, who is assisting this founder Acharya, then you have those who are going to be, you know, just how you say, they're committed to the mission, but not necessarily to any particular individual, and those who are committed to a specific individual. Understand? So the respect to those who have that, who are committed, is then a little bit more. Means, in other words, all senior devotees we respect. Then of that, those who are specifically committed to helping us, then we're more respect is there. Than the one who is given diksha, then more than that. But all of that is then less than what is there for the founder. Does that make any sense? Mm. Like that. Because it's the commitment is there. So that's natural that there needs to be more surrender. Is that understood?
Yeah. Sometimes it may happen that the founder is not actually there. For example, in our case, like we are grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, so we did not really have direct contact, I didn't see him personally, but we have but more contact.
You haven't had direct contact?
Not physical contact, through books actually, yeah, we have.
Touch this book, then you will have contact. Yes, now you have contacted His Divine Grace. Means this is the founder Acharya. Mm. You understand? So the founder Acharya came in a form where we could see him, but this is the founder Acharya. These books are the founder Acharya. One who studies, tries to understand, tries to preach, tries to live, then they are a follower of the founder. Like that. The physical contact, that's important for diksha. But for siksha, it's not. Like that. We can, just like between Vishwanath and Narottam, there was no physical contact, on this plane. There was 100 years difference between them. But Vishwanath felt he was the disciple of Narottam. Dikshayi had his guru. His name is Radharaman Chakrabarti. But Siksha, then it was Narottam. Right? So he took initiation from someone in the line of Narottam. So therefore he's getting Narottam's instructions through them. But he's feeling that his main instructions are coming from Narottam. Yeah. So therefore, we are studying Prabhupada's books. This is our instructions. This is our life. This is our siksha. So then anyone who can help us in that, then we respect. We're respecting them. Then of those who are committed to specifically helping us, then there's more respect. Because that more surrender is there. Service from their side, so that more surrender needs to be there. So we have to be able to see that and be able to discriminate, right? So who we're having more or less respect for. See, the problem comes is that when one comes, the material world generally is one doesn't want to respect anybody. It's only out of fear, right? That anything gets done in the material world, right? It's only out of fear of the Lord that the sun mounts his chariot every day and the wind blows and the water does what it's supposed to do and Yamaraj and everybody does their work. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. They just know he's the biggest and you get out of hand and, they're not foolish, They've seen what happened to Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha and Madhu and Kaitava and, a whole long list. So they know that, you don't not do your duties like that. So out of fear of the Lord, they're doing their duties. So this yeah. So the point is that the personal contact is there to see that we are following. Because otherwise, someone has Prabhupada's books. By reading them, one may advance very, very nicely. There was one case in Russia where there were some devotees traveling on a train, earlier days. And while they were sitting on the train, I guess they were moving, they were, in how you say, civilian dress. And then some man came up to them, and started to try to interest them, I think, in a Xerox copy of one of Prabhupada's books. He had a whole bunch of them. And so they, you know, and they listened to his whole thing and like this and that, and you know, them trying to explain to taking the book and all this. And then they ask him, well, why is it he does this? And where does he get this idea that he's got to, you know, distribute these books? And he says, well, I got one of these books. And in this book, it says if you want to make spiritual advancement, then you must distribute these books. So therefore, he had them copied, and he's distributing the books. He's never seen a devotee, doesn't even know that there's a whole movement. You know, he knows Prabhupada talks about Lord Chaitanya's movement. He doesn't know that there's centers and devotees and all this stuff. So like that. So from the book, that's what Prabhupada says, that the mission will go on. It's just a matter of we want to take part. These books can restart, even if everybody goes away. You know, which is very doubtful. But even if it did, the books will ensure that it starts again. Like that. It will happen. Like that. So, but there's every chance that our sincerity may not be that great. Someone who's very sincere, then it may work like this. But someone who's not, they need that association. So then, by having someone guiding one, and having good association of advanced devotees, then we advance more quickly. Like that. Then we quickly advance. Otherwise, there may be difficulty. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we have to have those who are present. So, both go together. The instructions of the founder, the instructions as we hear them from other devotees, on the instruction given by the founder, and that personal association and care. Like that. So all that has to be there. That's ideal. That's the ideal situation. Does that make sense? So one doesn't have to worry that one did not, you know, take diksha from Prabhupada, because the essential point of diksha is siksha, and that we have. Okay. Does that make sense?
Your movement, who is going to deliver actually from material existence? Srila Prabhupada or Diksha Guru?
Who is going to deliver?
Yeah.
I see. You want to know who's going to deliver?
Yeah.
Means yourself or anyone in particular that you want
to? Srila Prabhupada or Diksha Guru?
No, but who are they going to deliver?
Yeah.
No.
So ultimate actually.
But who are they delivering?
Yeah. I mean, he's asking whether you are in general.
Means, why do you want to know?
For example, for me.
Oh, okay. So, the point is that when Krishna is pleased, then we get delivered. Does that make some sense? If we do not please Krishna, we do not get delivered. So then, how do we please Krishna?
By pleasing Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, when the spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna is pleased. So that's how we get delivered. Does that make sense? Yeah. You don't need to get into too many. Yeah. Yes?
So you show respect to different... like the grandfather.
Mm. How? Well, it means it depends upon the etiquette. That's where all the etiquettes come in. You know, that are there in either the Dharma Shastra or in the Pancharatra. You know, the basic etiquettes that are there.
What with the instructing spiritual?
It depends upon the platform. Means if it's, see, it's like in instructing spiritual masters, you have those who, how do you say, you have the preachers, right? And of the preachers, you have just in general. So anyone who is preaching, they're offered respect. You know, we have to be proper and respect them as someone who is advanced, that we can, you know, something we can gain from them. Then, if we specifically like what they're preaching, but there's maybe not necessarily such much of a relationship, it's still basically the same. Just, you know, that respect is there. It means conscious of, you know, if their presence is there, we're conscious of that. So we don't act too informally or don't, you know, behave how we wish we wouldn't behave, you know, like that. If that instructing spiritual master has made a commitment to, you know, take you back to Godhead, like the Diksha Guru, then the same kind of respect that would be afforded to the Diksha Guru would be afforded to that Siksha Guru, or however many there are of that platform, like that. And then the founder Acharya, then, you know, has already been established what we're worshipping. You know, the daily Guru Puja and study of his books and all that.
And following instructions.
Yeah, following instructions. That's the main, is following instructions. But still, the etiquette just in the dealings. Mm-hmm. That, in other words, someone like that, there'll always be a little more formality will be there. Mm-hmm. You know? That's important. That's how you can tell a good student, is even in, if the situation is not so formal, they'll maintain the formality. It, not to the point that it becomes too rigid, but to the point where they remain respectful and take the instructions seriously. If you become too familiar means that they won't take their instructions seriously. So that person then becomes not a good student. So that's a very major thing that the teacher should be looking for, is a student has to be able to maintain formality in an informal situation, because the informal situation, then so many things can be given, so many things can be gotten across. In that situation, they can still maintain the formality necessary to learn. Well, if they drop that and they just become equals, then no learning's going on. And so then that's not a good student. So that the essential point of formality, of respecting the instructions and always accepting that person as senior, you know, then that's there. Even if it becomes more friendly, still they're always senior. Just like Krishna's friends, there are four types, you know. There's those who are senior to him, those that are junior to him, those who are equal, and those who are intimate, like that. Does that make?
You see that very well in Mahabharata, how they deal with the elders.
That's the importance of. That's why the Purana becomes actually more important than the Veda in the Kali Yuga, because in the other ages, by hearing, they would understand the principle, and then they would understand how to, just by given, they didn't understand it by, you know, whatever, by the situation or by the instructions. Given one example, then they understand how to operate the whole principle under any circumstance, like that. So just by hearing and just the philosophy, they could do that. But in the Kali Yuga, because it's, you know, the intelligence isn't as great. So therefore, very nice example where we can see that's there. So the Itihasas and the Puranas and all that are there just for that purpose. And they get down into detail of etiquette. You won't see them miss that.
I'm thinking of one example, how Arjuna would shoot the arrow first at the feet.
Yeah.
And then
So it fits, one, the mood of, one, he is their student, so he is offering respects, and two, is Kshatriyas. Then, it's, you know, he's shot the arrows. And they first came and offered respects without, but then when it's time to fight, then...
They ask permission.
Yeah, they ask permission. Like that. So this is proper. One can't avoid, you know. That kind of student, one can't not teach. See, the point is one is trying to establish oneself as a student that the spiritual master feels like teaching. You know? shouldn't be that the spiritual master is just trying to please his spiritual master and trying to preach. It should be that they want to teach. So then, like that, you see that Drona and Bhishma and Kripa, they want to give their blessings.
You know? So Prabhupada says, don't want to see Krishna, but may act in such a way so Krishna...
Krishna, yeah. Yeah. That's it. So that's what all the etiquette is there for, is so that we learn what is the proper behavior. Because otherwise the tendency is we don't know, either due to material desire or due to a lack of training or something. We just don't know how to behave. So the etiquettes are given. You know, the examples are given, how to behave. And that's the way it works. You do it, it works. You don't do it, it doesn't work. You know, that's the thing. It may work on the lower modes. When one's very much absorbed in passion and ignorance, then one can use systems that are geared towards passion and ignorance to try to kind of like stabilize the position. Like once I was talking to one devotee who was studying the techniques of, you know, modern psychology for counseling. So he was saying that if someone's Krishna conscious, then you can just describe the philosophy and discuss on that platform. But if they become so bewildered by the material energy, then they go crazy. So then these techniques are good for dealing with crazy people and bringing them back to normal. Then you can preach nicely the philosophy. You know? So that was probably one of few who were into psychology that actually understood this balance. Most think that, you know, they can take it right through to the top levels of Krishna consciousness. But it's actually the opposite. You understand the devotional line and how it works, you can go down into the lower. Because it's only, all it is perversion of the higher. The lower is coming from the higher. The higher is not coming from the lower. So you understand rasa, you understand it right down to the grossest sense gratification. You know? Because you understand what's working. Like that. Otherwise, they don't understand.
I'd like to have your opinion on one aspect of disrespecting guru or senior personality. Like when a guru is in a difficult situation, or a fallen position, like that, or under test, what is the proper mood of respect that the disciple in that situation?
Is generally one respects what one has gained in the past. That's the main thing, because at the present it makes it a little bit more difficult. Because there may not be example or other things that are respected. We may respect them as a person. You know, that they may be carrying on very nicely or very strong and, you know, or so many difficulties, but they're trying to somehow or another put it together. So we can respect them as a person. You know, we respect them as what they've done for Prabhupada, what service they've done for the movement, or what they've done, what we've gained from their association or direction, like that. So that's always respected. But one may not worship. That is the thing. Because worship means that respect is being taken to a particular level. So at that point, when they're not acting in that position, then the worship is not done. Because the worship is actually being done for this Lord. But we're worshiping the Lord through that person. So when the person's not acting as a proper via media, then the Lord is not overly happy to accept that worship through that person. Like that. So therefore that kind of, because that's the external aspect of it anyway. Like that. So the formal, the external aspect has external qualifications. Just like the Duditi worship, if you're not physically clean, you can't do it. You can't just say, well, we chant Hare Krishna and we don't care. But Didi worship is only there because we have a material body and we see the material energy and we don't see the spirit. So Krishna has come in the Archa incarnation so that we can see him. Therefore, we have to take what we do see and possess and feel dear and bring it in line with him. Like that. So there is very serious, you know, adhikari there. You know, the qualifications by both guru and disciple. So
say? Chips.
Right? Doesn't chips normally come in a newspaper?
Huh?
Chips normally come in a newspaper?
Yeah.
So then, yeah, so then that aspect, so it's a fine point, because the worship has a function. Means we as individuals, as persons, then relationship is there. So that aspect is how you say, carried on. But the platform, I mean, yeah. But we have to see that in those dealings, that it's also in line, the proper balance of the philosophy and the religious duties, like that. Therefore, it mentions that if the spiritual master or senior devotee or that is not acting in a proper way, if they can't be corrected, then generally one does not keep close association, like that. Because then one may gain those moods that are there, those improper moods, those may be gained. So one wants to be careful of that, like that. So one will keep other association that will help one, you know. One, you know, takes shelter of Prabhupada's books and the movement and the devotees, and in this way, you know, things carry on.
Is there karmic implication in the books?
I wouldn't expect so, as long as they were, you know, from a time or when that are accepted as they were, you know, proper. You know, once the mood becomes improper, then that may be, those things may be discarded. But if it's there, then it's not so much, but one must maintain the balance to understand that this is how you say the relationship has come to a neutral platform, and that we have, you know, what, you know, has been gained and all that is there, but one has to be very careful, and one also then would need to just keep one's eye out for, or ear out, whichever you're reading or hearing, for to see that there's nothing that's being presented that may have been a forerunner of difficulties. You know, if once the particular difficulties are known, one just has to be very careful that in those areas, that if there has been, you know, whatever it is, that there's no trace of that there, like that, you know. So there may be, there may not be, you know. It may be something just suddenly happened, or it could be something that's very long and it was a weed, but it was very small, so it didn't make much prominence. But then, due to some way or another, that weed was not removed. It became very big, and so then it's seen. So one just has to see. Does that make any sense? Anything else?
As they just mentioned that out of the fear of the Lord, the sun is moving, the wind is blowing. So like, so out of what fear actually we should do our activities?
Means point is we want to come to the platform of love. But we're fearful of that. If we don't properly perform devotional service, then we will become overwhelmed by the material energy. So Prahlad Maharaj mentioned that. He says, I have no fear of his form of Nisringadev or like that, like the demigods. The demigods were all afraid. But he said, I only fear your material energy, because if by her influence I can forget you, that I'm worried about. So that's the only fear of the living of the devotee, is that they may forget Krishna and come under the influence of material energy. So they're always trying to be dependent upon Krishna.
Maharaj, you are in the nectar of devotion, and the way you are explaining things is the ideal situation. In the ideal relation, diksha, shiksha, situation. Now, you know, I have this doubt in my mind, so I'm going to bring it out. Taking this to a more concrete level here in ISKCON today, this is not happening. So many gurus have fallen one way or the other. And I know, like, sometimes devotees approach me to, you know, to talk about this. I don't really know what, you know, some devotees, they had two diksha gurus falling, and now they are totally, they don't know what to do. So, you know, what, how can we help these devotees? They, I see the danger of them going to this Ritvik side, because better have a bogus theory than be an orphan, you know. That's what they say without saying. And see, I'm not in that situation, but I'm concerned with that. You know, because two men by the numbers, it's just thousands of devotees in this situation throughout the world.
It's, see, as one cannot understand the, how do I say, exceptions to the rule unless one understands the rule perfectly. So now if one understands the rule is, has been explained here, I up to now haven't seen anyone who's really had any problem with this. Means other than the emotional pain of losing the association of someone who they felt was dear and had a good relationship with. But otherwise, philosophically becoming deviated that they don't mind ending up on the moon instead of Golok Vrindavan because, you know, it just seems relationships are nicer. Means Prabhupada said a philosophical deviation, that is much worse than a sensual. Sensual only affects the senses. It can affect this body, maybe affect next birth. But, you know, it's something very soon to go away. But a philosophical deviation can keep you engaged for millions of lifetimes. Look at impersonalism. They spend millions of lifetimes trying to perfect impersonalism. You know? So it's much, much more dangerous. Much more dangerous. So the difficulty comes not with the ideal philosophy, the difficulty comes with the lack of ideal in just our backgrounds. From the, at least from, I can speak from the Judaic, Christian, Islamic, you know, and all those who are coming down from Abraham, their traditions, is all their, all the persons that were speaking, either Moses or Jesus or Muhammad, they could not actually speak on the platform of religious principles, just pure material religious principles, let alone Sat Dharma, transcendental religious principles, because the people were so unqualified that they had to just be brought just to the bare minimum of morality. I mean, you look at the Ten Commandments. You know, you're not dealing with a high caliber of culture here. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't, you know, use the Lord's name while you curse at the next guy. Don't steal his wife. Don't steal his buffalo. You know, don't burn his house down. Don't kill. So, I mean, you're dealing with it fairly, and these are like top of the line. People are just, you know, just pulling their hair out, thinking, how is it possible anyone could follow this? You know? Like that. But these are technically called sub-religious principles. They are principles that are in support of the of the actual religious principles. Because you have to have these moods of mercy, compassion, all these things to properly follow religious principles. So it's a first step. It's the first step. You know? Therefore, you always see that they're talking about somebody coming later that will deliver them. Right? The Jews, the Messiah. Then those Jews that thought Jesus was the Messiah became Christian. But then he's supposed to come again. You know, so there's always this idea, something was given, but more is to come. You know, because it's only gotten to the moral platform. Therefore, philosophy, especially in a lot of present day religions, where's the philosophy? Right? You don't find it much. You know, all it is, you know, have you been saved, or, you know, have you been blessed with the blood of Jesus, or, you know, that kind of stuff. There's no philosophy there. There's just sentiment. So it's the difficulty comes then, therefore, philosophical deviation is not even noticed. You know, it's not a big deal. Okay, you know, it's a little bit this way or that way. But a sensual deviation is considered very heavily, that's the worst. That's the worst. You could ask most devotees, which is worse, if somebody, you know, doesn't really understand the philosophy properly or is not really properly situated in controlling the senses or has a sensual fall down, which is worse? And you'll generally find the natural reaction will be the sensual. You know, at least that has been my experience. I've heard devotees here yelling and screaming, jumping up and down in Mayapur and, you know, foaming at the mouth and shaking and waving fingers, and it's all about sensual fall down. Like that. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example many times. Kirtananda, no one said boo until they found that there was some moral turpitude. Before that, he was philosophically way out to lunch. Nobody said anything. But as soon as they found some moral breach of conduct, immediately, that's it. So that is because of our background. Or I would put that down to a good cause of that. Because in the religious background is there is no philosophy. It just doesn't exist. Like that. So one has to be, that is a weakness. Two is that even though Prabhupada's, you know, mentioned it so many times, what is the platform of absolute, the devotees won't give up their, at least those I've seen from the Protestant backgrounds, won't give up their Christian concept of absolute, which means unequaled, one without a second, no one can approach, no one can this, no one can that. Like that. Perfect. And if there's one imperfection, finished. Like that. It's 100% perfect or 100% write-off. There's nothing in between. So even though we talk so much about personalism, it's actually, this platform is totally impersonal. You'll find much more balance in India, is they had a relationship this much is there, that much they can deal with the person. Beyond that, no. You know? But in that area, they'll deal. Outside of that, they won't deal. You know, therefore you have the syndrome, if somebody's good at one thing, they must be good at everything. Right? You go to somebody, you know, for some question on some engineering, and he gives good answers, and the next thing you're asking about management, and then the next thing you're asking about philosophy and what he thinks about our gurus and GBC and sannyasis. It goes on all the time. Because they're good at one thing, they're good at everything. And then you call in a guy for this, and then when he says one thing you don't like, you throw everything out, even his engineering. Right? So when we say we got to bring it down to the concrete is us, you know. That's the difficulty, is our lack of understanding. Because Prabhupada never he always made the point of following the instructions of the spiritual master. Right? So the instruction of the spiritual master is the most important element. But if we look at in dealings with the spiritual master, even today, so much of the dealings are only on the side of the ritual, the diksha. Right? That's all. The siksha side of it is not so important. The instruction of the spiritual master, you may follow that or you may not. But you only feel that it's proper connection if the worship is there. Because if I have the daily Guru Puja, I feel I'm connected. Yeah, I may not follow the instructions, but I feel I'm a good disciple. So the emphasis being on diksha, this creates this problem. So because of this, at least I've seen up to now in discussing on, I can't speak for everybody, but generally for in the past those who are more the intellectual level of the GBC, they haven't chosen to pick to use in general a more advanced application of the guru-disciple relationship other than this external ritual-based connection, because devotees in general don't think beyond that, aren't able to think beyond that. Like that. So the point is that the person's fallen away. Did they get any benefit from the person? Did they make advancement? So has that been lost? No. So that's there. So we don't have to sit around and say, I've been cheated, I've been this, I've been that, and all the things. I've been cheated what? If we were so honest and pure, we wouldn't be in the material world to begin with. We're the cheaters. You know? We're supposed to be serving Krishna, and we're here trying to... That's why all the shastras say he, right? Sometimes it's brought up. The feminists want to know why it always says he. Because every living entity thinks I am the controller and enjoyer, which is the Purusha Bhav, which means they think they're God. So there's only one he in the universe, that's Krishna. But the living entity thinks they are Purusha. So therefore, you use he, it applies. It is... What is it? It is... How do you say? Is it the asexual? Huh? Unisex. Yeah. Means when you say he, that's unisex. Because it means the enjoyer of the body and the material energy. Like that. So it fits. So we're the cheaters. Like that. So now the point is they've given us benefit. They've taken us this far. So now the natural thing is why did they take us far? Because some mantras were chanted at a yajna, we threw a banana into the fire, and that was it. That was the real benefit we got from the person. Was it that, or was it the instructions and the encouragement? Right? So that instructions and encouragement can continue. So many devotees are there. We can take from other places. We may take from one, we may take from many. But the instruction, the Prabhupada's books are still there. The instructions are still there. The only thing that's, the main thing that's been lost is that faith and relationship that was there, that was very deep and very, you know, very dear. But the, as far as tattva goes, we can continue very nicely. So if they want to get into tattva, nothing's been lost. It's on the personal platform that something's been lost. Right? So then if their problem is there as well, you know, I can't handle the emotions of going through this so many times. So then is the solution in like the impersonalists? I've tried to enjoy the material world, establish relationships. It's always been painful. So therefore, I give up all form, relationships, anything, and become, you know, go for a Brahman realization. So this is actually what they're saying. All these personal relationships I put my faith in and I lost. So now I will go for an impersonal. Because Prabhupada's not, one, he's not going to fall down. Right? He's not like that. But at the same time, he's not here to kick me in the butt when I do something wrong. You know? So in both ways I win. You know? One, I'm a disciple of Prabhupada. And two, there's no one to tell me what to do. So I'm a free man. So therefore, you go back to the word he. You know, I can control and enjoy as I please, and who's to tell me? You know, because we're all equal. So it's impersonalism. It's not actually devotional service. It takes up that flavor. It's not devotional service. It may look like devotional service, but so do all the other apasampadayas. They all look like devotional service. But because they're philosophically wrong, they follow the same etiquettes. They read the same books. You know, they sit in the line and they can serve and dress and this and that. They can do a lot of the etiquettes better than we can. So all the things that are connected with diksha, or the pancharatrik aspect, they're much more expert, many of these upper sampradayas, so expert. But what's the problem? They're philosophically off. So when they get into philosophically wrong, why the rhythmics? Why not, you know, the owl bowels and, you know, what do you call it? Anything but the Garanga Nagaris, but, you know. Shaki-baki, yeah, that's a good one. Shaki-bakis. Now there, that is, you know, I mean, nowadays they like to wear earrings, you know, so they can wear. Shaki-bakis are where they all dress up as gopis. So you have some guy with, you know, 3 days of beard on, and he's got, you know, one of those teardrop pearls hanging from the tip of his nose, you know, and wearing a sari. Lipstick. Oh, lipstick now.
Yeah,
oh, I haven't seen the lipstick.
See,
yeah, you can see it. Some of them, they're Shaki Bakis. They're funny. Bhakti Siddhanta says when he talked with him, he was making it was a thing on Sahajiyas, I think. He was saying, he was specifically taking a dig at them. He was talking about the they're doing the Shaki Bakis dressed up in their sari and all that. He says, what are you going to do I think it's O Sahajiya Bhai. What are you going to do if Krishna decides to perform his Vastra Haran Leela, the stealing the clothes of the gopis? Then what are you going to do? You know, like that. So. Philosophically, they have some problems. Like that. You know. That would probably go down well in, you know, some parts of New York, but. or what is it? King's Cross. King's Cross.
San Francisco.
Huh?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. San Francisco, yeah. There's a few places that would probably go very well. Oh, yeah. No, that's another thing, those guys. Then, yeah, so the whole thing comes back to this. Prabhupada's a founder acharya. Problem was is that the attention went off Prabhupada as the founder acharya. So it should be that Prabhupada, we establish a relationship with Prabhupada as the founder acharya. That's there. We add to that relationship by adding in siksha and diksha gurus. Like that. So if there's any loss in any of that, Prabhupada's still there. We don't lose totally everything. We just lose that person who's personally taking care of us. You know? Like that. But you can still get the work done. It may not be as, you know, how you say, pleasant as far as relationship goes. It'll take some time. There's loss there in his relationship. But it's technically, as far as advancing Krishna consciousness, there's not the loss, how you say, maybe the dynamism of the advancement at that time may be lost by that personal guidance. But the ability to advance has not been lost at all. Some will explain it like that. So the main problem comes down to those who are explaining it in this way. Oh, we've got off on the point of an absolute. So the thing of the absolute is iron and fire. Prabhupada always gives the example of iron and fire. He never says, you know, that except we're with Krishna, one without a second, this, that. Asamurdva is relating to Krishna. But with anyone other than Krishna, absolute means in the fire of Krishna consciousness. And in this absolute, there is variation. There is differentiation. Madhva calls this taratamya. It's like Rupa Goswami is absolute. Sanatana Goswami is absolute. But Rupa Goswami respects Sanatana Goswami. Jiva Goswami is absolute, but he respects Rupa. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is absolute, but he respects Jiva and the other Goswamis. So within spiritual, there is variation. So generally you'll find in this philosophy, there's no variation. These other philosophies, where we deal, absolute means it's just, unless they're completely perfect on all platforms, they're expert managers, everything like that, they speak wonderfully, everything they do is, you know, materially perfect. You know, I could bring out, you know, textbooks from, you know, all kinds of whatever Western, you know, paradigm I'm into, and they follow that perfectly. So that is called perfect. And if something goes wrong, then they're not perfect. So they're thrown out. Because they're defective. They're eternally defective. Right? But the actual point of absolute is that if they're in the fire, they're absolute. If they're out of the fire, they're not absolute. And when you stick them back in the fire, they become absolute again. Right? You understand? But this takes faith. This is the thing. Where there is strong faith, there's no problem with this. Right? It's just like, you know, in the 70s, if someone blooped, went away, did all kinds of nonsense, as soon as they come back, it's like, oh, you're back, good, okay. They just get right back into their service. You know, they just ask, my locker's still there, and it's like maybe no one came, maybe someone did. Oh, yeah, someone else is in there, you can use this one. No one even bothers to ask what they did before. No one cares. No one could care less what they were doing for the last 6 months, 9 months. No one would ask. Unless they said, you know, what it was, you know. But otherwise, no one of that, no one cared at all, because the faith was so strong, it didn't disturb them, that this person just went out and enjoying themselves to the max for the last 6 to 9 months, and now comes back to Krishna consciousness. But now that's not allowed. Someone falls, eternally damned. Why? Because my faith is so small. If they can go and do that and come back and still have position, then why not me? What's to keep me from doing it? Because we see Prabhupada would do. Someone was a manager, they fell away. When they came back, he put them right back in management. Because they had the nature of a manager. If they didn't manage, how are they going to serve Krishna and purify themselves? One is purified by service. There's an idea now we're going to purify ourselves by restricting service. No, you purify by doing service. That meets your nature. If you see they've been a terrible manager all these time and this and that, and then they finally fall down, you know, like this after disturbing everybody on the planet and all that, then when they kind of get it back together, you won't stick them back in management. Because that was the cause, maybe have been the cause of their disturbance, because they weren't rightly situated. But if they were doing nice service in that, and then they went away, then you put them back in that service. So like that means it's a leader. May, of course, you know, position, certain positions we may be more careful about. Sannyas or guru, even like GBC. But even Prabhupada wasn't so worried about GBC. You know? And even in some cases, not even in sannyas. Depends on the situation. But otherwise, just take it. Guru, GBC, may. But leader, then you have to be careful. If someone's fallen down, by that they've gotten experience, now they're able to speak more strongly, then naturally, why they shouldn't be speaking Krishna consciousness? But people are worried, all people will follow them. But isn't that the point of Krishna consciousness? Is someone leads, someone follows, and everybody goes back to Godhead. Like that. Because otherwise, if it's, yeah, it's like, so the we have to see is that many of our definitions, we have overstressed diksha instead of siksha, therefore the problem. It means if the diksha guru goes away, all connection, everything is broken, finished. But that's our idea. That doesn't seem to be the idea of our sampradaya, it's a siksha line. Diksha must be there, but the siksha is what keeps things alive. that. Therefore, you would see that when devotees did accept the Diksha Guru, they wouldn't then kind of reject or limit their association with people that they did have faith in as Siksha Gurus before they accepted one of them as Diksha. But otherwise, once the Diksha Guru comes up, everybody else is sidelined. But they also are maintained. And those relationships are there. And our relationship with Prabhupada and his books and his mission. Then it is a personal, you know, difficulty. But it's not the end of spiritual life.
Their situation is more or less like ours. Prabhupada no longer with us, and so we lost our diksha.
You lose the Bapu. You lose the Bapu, but not the Bani.
Yeah.
It's a little different in that the diksha. How do you say? It just depends upon how you want to approach the aspect of the ritual side of the diksha. Mainly what's happened there is that person who has personally seen that they understood Prabhupada's instruction is not there. You know, one can also present technically that the ritual side of it is also not lost. But the problem is, unless you're dealing with some faith and some steadiness, then difficulty arises due to the unchaste mind. Therefore, the GBC decided it better that side is done. Just like nowadays, it comes up, devotees have it here, the understanding, okay, Siksha Guru is there. And when they, you know, they'll ask this, that, and so on, and then when they agree with the idea, accept it, yes, it's good, Siksha Guru, all this. One of the first questions they ask is, what's the ritual for accepting a Siksha Guru? First question. So that's the problem. Unless there's a ritual, they don't think anything happened. Therefore, the GBC said, dare take reinitiation, because then you think something happened. Otherwise, they're not going to think anything happened. But technically, you just have to find another advanced devotee who you have faith in their instructions and follow their instructions as your life and soul. And that is reinitiation. Reinitiation must be there, but it's just a matter of who, according to the holy name, you know, according to the Pancharatrik system, you know, or according to the ritual of the Pancharatrik system. Right? Because the Pancharatrik system is mainly philosophy, and then that philosophy manifests as a system of rules and regulations to control our senses. Engage our senses. So most take that lower level, like that. But the main Pancharatrik is the philosophy of why we do the different things we do. And then there's the transcendental, you know, the Bhagavad. Pancharatra is also transcendental, but meaning the just the emphasis on the holy name and those things with the holy name. So the satsang is the main thing. But we see, I mean, just relationships in general aren't very strong. You know? Relationships in general just aren't strong. You know, parents and their children, husbands and wives, the presidents and the temple devotees, the president and the GBC, you know, just all these things, they're all very, very light, very, very light. I mean, as it is now, you see people, they find someone else they like listening to better, they reject their guru, take initiation from them. And it's a zoo. You know? It's out of hand. So even though they're disturbed with the difficulties that come up with the overemphasis on diksha, they can't also live without it. That's the problem. If they could deal on a more mature platform, then they could understand that surrender to someone through the process of siksha, you know, hearing and following the instructions, and that is the reinitiation that keeps the devotional creeper alive, and that keeps the Pancharatrik mantras alive. But that takes some maturity to understand and to be able to affect, that one is given one's word. That was what Prabhupada would always wonder about, is that, you know, someone may doubt him, or someone may doubt somebody, but how can they doubt the scripture? You know? Or they've given their word in front of the deities, the Vaishnavas, the fire, the spiritual master. How can they break the vow? You know, but it's just so lightly, just, you know, one day, well, you know, that's it. And then they just give up whatever vows they're following, initiation or sannyas or, you know, anything, just so easily. It's just all so light. You know? It's all so light. So because of that, then there's a problem. I mean, you don't find that in those who are trained and naturally pious. You don't really see that. There's a dedication, no matter what it is. You see, very common in India. You know, some gentleman comes to the temple. They come around, and especially in our temples, and, you know, generally most people are busy or not around or this or that. So, you know, the guy washing pots or the guy cleaning the veranda, you know, they're sitting around the temple. So they come in and they ask them a few questions, what's going on. They explain to them, and they take them around, show them the deities. Maybe they get them some prasad or give them some charinamrita. When that person comes back to the temple, every time he'll ask for that devotee. And he feels that they have a strong relationship, that this devotee is the one who has shown me about Krishna consciousness. Like, they'll accept that this person is their Bhartma Pradarshak Guru. And even so many years later, they'll talk about it. You know, 20 years later, they'll talk about, yes, I came to the temple and, you know, Bhakta Joe was there and he did this and that. Bhakta Joe may still be washing pots. It doesn't matter. The relationship that they came, this person paid attention, asked their question, answered their questions, took care of them a little bit, you know, took a little bit of endeavor that you could, you know, to go out of the way to help them. They'll remember that. They'll never forget it. So this is the natural pious position of the human. So unless one has come from that, then it sometimes one doesn't appreciate the relationship aspect, though we'll complain about it, I've been screwed so many times in relationships, but actually we don't know what relationships are. If we did, we would know that those part of the relationships haven't gone. You know? Like that. It means, just like you said, father's there, father takes care, father dies. You can't say, I've been cheated, I've been this, I'm that, that. That's all the farther they could take you. So it's unfortunate that that's all the farther, because the ideal is you know, they, you know, go away under different circumstances, like that. But that relationship is not lost. That part, the past, present may be lost. Future may or may not be clear. Past is not lost. So the tendency is they write off everything. So naturally, what to do? You know? We may say, well, they did this and they did that, but that's all moral. Since when has, you know, a universe full of immoral activity ever overbalanced, you know, one, you know, small fraction of a portion of a drop of devotional service? I mean, I've never heard of a scripture that describes it. So therefore, if they benefited us in any way, we'll remember that. Like that. So something is there. It's not everything's been lost. Like that. But it's generally due to our impersonal background, you know, impersonal cultural background, that these problems are there. Same time is that you have to be careful with the sentiment. One has to have the philosophy along with the sentiment. That. So if the philosophy is not there, then one also can be easily sidetracked. Therefore, you see millions and millions of Indians following all kinds of bogus people because they have a nice relationship with, you know. And even if they find out the guy's completely bogus, they kind of, well, you know, this, that, you know. They'll generally not see them writing songs about the fool on the hill. Like that. Just they distance themselves. You know, they may not go around, but they respect them. Like that. Because it says in the Dharma Shastra, even if someone presents himself as a Brahmin, he's not a Brahmin, and you give charity to them, then you get double the amount of what you've given back in the future. Because you've given to them just because they claim that they're a Brahmin. So out of respect for Brahmins, and this person says he's a Brahmin, though he's not, you're giving charity. Even that's considered pious. So therefore, you know, whatever. You know, he may be calling himself a temple president. He's doing the duties of the temple president. I personally may not feel he's doing a great job and he's, you know, disturbing a lot of devotees and he can't really help me in my devotional service. But he has to be respected because he's taking that position. He's doing that service for Prabhupada. So at least we respect like that. And so unless I'm in a position to change that, then, you know, fine. It's not my business. It's someone else's business. You know, there's plenty of managers and there's a GBC and all it's their business. My business is to do my service. Like that. So in this way, one puts one's main attention on one's developing one's own service without criticizing others. Like that. Otherwise, it's easy to criticize others and have opinions on everything, right? It's like it's the typical scenario. A couple of brahmacharis get together someplace in the evening, you know, with some mahaprasad, and they talk all night, you know, until 11 o'clock, you know, like that. They solve all the problems of the movement, right? I mean, everything. Like that. They deal with every aspect that there is, you know. They've got it all worked out, you know. And it's just, you know, if just the world would listen to them, you know, it'd be a better place. You know? That's all. But what to do? No one had a tape recorder, you know. But so that's easy. That's going on every night in every temple of the world. You know? It's happening everywhere. You know. But, you know, we're saying it should be worry about our own life like that. You know? And be broad minded towards others. Okay, so I think we'll end here. What time is it?
5 to 7.
Yeah, we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki.
Jai
Nitya Gaura Premanandi.
Jai Bhakti Vijaya Purnamalati.
Jai.